Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something really crucial if you're making any kind of media. Think filming documentaries, shooting ads, even just local news coverage. You're basically dealing with a whole mess of legal stuff, privacy rights, and, well, potentially huge financial risks.
Yeah, it's true. Great content. It needs more than just a good idea, right? It needs like a solid legal fitting. So our goal today is really to cut through all that legal jargon. We've looked at guidelines for media pros and pulled out the really critical need-to-know stuff to help you stay compliant, ethical, and frankly, keep your wallet safe.
Exactly. We're diving deep into the legal shields, you could say, that protect people when cameras are around, covering everything from, you know, basic consent all the way up to those massive fines for data breaches. It's kind of a full system check on the rules of media production. So let's start right at the beginning. Privacy and consent.
Okay, yeah. When we talk privacy and media, the first thing is the Human Rights Act, 1998. It's fundamental. It basically says everyone has the right to respect for his private and family life, his home, and his correspondence. And that's not just, you know, a nice idea. It's the legal standard. It dictates how producers have to act.
Okay, let's make that practical. Think about those documentaries filmed in really sensitive places. Schools, care homes, or the classic one, hospitals. If a crew gets permission to film in the hospital generally, that doesn't automatically mean they can film everyone inside, does it?
No, exactly right. That general permission from the hospital management, that's just step one. When you're actually dealing with patients, or staff for that matter, the legal and ethical bar is explicit, informed consent. If someone says, no, don't film me, the crew has to stop filming them, or at the very least, make absolutely sure they're anonymous visually.
So blurring them out, basically, or pixelating.
Right.
Or maybe framing them out in the edit, that kind of thing.
Yeah, precisely. But the tricky part there is making sure that blurring actually works, that it's 100% effective. Let's say you blur someone's face, right? But maybe they're wearing a really distinctive uniform, something unique. Or they have a very specific physical feature, maybe a tattoo or something. If someone watching could still reasonably figure out who that is, then you've actually failed in your legal duty to protect their privacy.
Oh, okay. That's a really important point. Identification isn't just about the face.
Exactly. And you have to be even more careful with vulnerable people. We're talking individuals who might not fully understand what they're agreeing to. Children, for example, or the elderly, or people who are seriously ill. In those situations, the burden to prove you got informed consent is much, much higher. You need more than just a quick, yeah, sure, on camera. You need solid proof that they or their legal guardians really got the implications of being broadcast.
Okay, so consent for people is vital, especially in sensitive places. But then you step outside, and the location itself becomes a whole new legal puzzle. And this is where lots of creators get tripped up, isn't it? The difference between a space the public can go into versus a space that's legally public land.
Oh, yeah. That's the classic mistake. You see a nice open plaza. It looks like a town square. Loads of people walking around. But it might actually be owned by a big shopping center company or maybe even the council, but under some private lease arrangement. Uh-huh. If it's privately owned, they can have rules like no filming or no professional photography. And those rules often apply.
Right. So even setting up a small tripod, if you haven't checked who owns it and got permission, you could technically be trespassing. You've got to do your homework on ownership first, even if it looks public.
Absolutely, you do. Now, if you are definitely on proper public property, like, you know, a pavement, a public park, the rules change a bit depending on what you're filming.
Okay, let's break that down. If it's just for personal use, snapping holiday photos, photos of your kids, generally, okay.
Generally, yes. Then you have editorial use, so news gathering, current affairs reporting. In public spaces, journalists usually have a right to film or photograph something newsworthy or do quick vox pop interviews. But there are two big conditions. You can't block the public highway, like cause an obstruction, and you absolutely cannot harass people.
Harassment. That comes up a lot, that tension between getting the story and being overly aggressive. Where's the legal line?
Well, the law is pretty clear, actually. You have a right to film in public, sure. But if your behavior becomes intimidating or really invasive, like relentlessly following someone down the street with a camera, that crosses the line into harassment. And also, that right to film in public stops dead at the boundary of private property. A photographer can't just nip into someone's front garden or climb over a fence or push open their door to get a shot. Doesn't matter how newsworthy they think it is, that's straight up trespass and invasion of privacy. No gray area there.
Okay, but then the moment your reason for filming shifts from news reporting to commercial use, like selling a product or using footage for profit, The whole compliance game changes completely, doesn't it? That's when the paperwork really piles up.
It really does. That's the nature of commercial media. You're essentially using someone's image or location to make money. So every single person, every identifiable property contributing to that image, they need to formally sign away certain rights. And that paperwork needs to be spot on.
Let's talk about the model release form.
Yeah.
That's essential for every single identifiable person in a commercial shoot.
Absolutely mandatory. And it's not just getting a signature, it's what that signature actually gives permission for. A model release form isn't just, okay, you can use my photo. It details the specific rights, the territory, so where it can be shown, the duration, how long they can use it. Often it's forever, in perpetuity. And the medium print, TV, online, billboards, whatever. If you're doing a commercial shoot with, say, 20 people in it, even just extras in the background, you need 20 separate legally sound model release forms covering all that scope of use.
And if you miss just one, you could face a lawsuit years later if that person sees their face on a billboard and never agreed to it or wasn't paid for it.
Precisely. That's the risk. And, you know, the same level of detail applies to the location itself. For a big commercial shoot, you're not just getting location permission. You often need permits for traffic management. Highways permission, it's often called. If your trucks or gear affect public roads or pavements, you'll need specific permission from the local council if you're using public land. And even this one catches people out permissions for buildings in the background if they're prominent and recognizable.
Hang on. Why do I need permission for a building that's just back there in the distance?
Because some well-known buildings have architectural copyrights, or their owners control their image rights. They might require a license fee, especially if your ad clearly uses the building's prestige or identity to help sell your product. They want to control how their property is associated commercially. It's like protecting a brand's identity, really. Getting all these permissions, it's not just ticking boxes, it's crucial risk management. Stops you having to scrap a whole project later because one element wasn't cleared properly.
Right, makes sense. Okay, moving on. Let's tackle reputation and data. Two huge areas where the financial stakes get really, really high for media companies. Let's start with defamation.
Okay. Defamation, simply put, is publishing a false statement about someone or a business that damages their reputation. We usually split it into slander, which is spoken defamation, and libel, which is defamation in a fixed form, print, online, broadcast. Libel is usually the main concern for media outlets.
And media companies are always walking this line, right? They need to report potentially damaging truths. But if they get the facts wrong, the fallout can be huge.
It really can be. Now, proving libel legally isn't easy. You generally have to show the statement was false, it was published to someone else, and it genuinely caused harm to the reputation. But if it is proven, the damages can be massive. Looking at past cases, compensation for serious libel can easily hit £300,000, sometimes more, for individuals whose lives or careers have been ruined by false reporting. So accuracy isn't just good journalism. Financially, it's measured in hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Wow. Okay. And even if a company weathers a libel storm, they've still got the Data Protection Act breathing down their neck. We're talking DPA 1998, but more importantly, the big update in 2018.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest shift in media compliance in recent years. The 98 Act set basic standards for handling personal data storage fairly, lawfully, etc. But the 2018 Act, which brought the UK into line with GDPR, dramatically upped the ante. It increased the obligations and, crucially, gave the rules some serious enforcement power. Real teeth.
So what's the main operational change for media companies under the 2018 Act? What do they have to do differently?
Well, it really shifted the burden of proof. Companies now have to actively demonstrate they're compliant, proactively. They need robust security for data, ensure it's accurate, but also follow two principles that sometimes get missed. One, only keep data for as long as you genuinely need it for the stated purpose. And two, only collect and keep the minimum amount of data necessary for that purpose. Data minimization is called. So once your project's finished, you have a legal duty to securely get rid of personal data you don't need anymore.
So let's say I run a production company. I collect names, emails, phone numbers from extras for one specific shoot. I can't just hang on to that list forever and use it for marketing my next project unless I got separate explicit permission for that purpose too.
Exactly that. And the people whose data you hold, the data subjects, they have stronger rights now, too. They can ask to see any data you've got on them. And importantly, they can demand you fix any incorrect information about them pretty much immediately. It means compliance isn't just a policy document. It's about active, ongoing data management.
And this brings us back to those eye-watering figures we mentioned at the start. The penalties for messing up under DPA 2018 are enormous.
They are. They're designed to hit major organizational failures, not just minor slip-ups. The maximum fines for serious breaches can go up to $17.5 million, or 4% of the company's total annual worldwide turnover, whichever of those numbers is bigger. We're not talking about losing one laptop here. We're talking about failing to secure huge customer databases or having really poor data access controls across the board. That level of fine basically guarantees that data security is no longer just an IT issue. It's a fundamental business priority.
So wrapping this all up, what's the main takeaway for you listening to this? Whether you're a creator, a producer, a publisher, we've gone through public versus private spaces, the absolute need for clear consent, all that commercial paperwork, and the, frankly, scary financial risks around getting facts wrong or data security wrong.
Yeah, the bottom line is knowing this stuff isn't just about navigating red tape. It's strategic risk management, plain and simple. Every choice you make, whether to blur someone in the background, whether to pay that fee for using a building's image, how long you keep someone's contact details, every single one directly impacts your potential legal liability.
And that brings us to a final thought for you to chew on. Consider this. Libel damages can run into hundreds of thousands. Data breach fines can hit tens of millions. How much does that sheer scale of financial risk change the equation for big media companies?
Yeah, think about it. When they're chasing a huge, maybe controversial story, knowing the potential multi-million pound cost of getting it wrong, it must force some very serious conversations, some difficult ethical calculations about accuracy and privacy long before anyone even picks up a camera. Understanding this isn't just about following rules, it's about seeing the real pressures and the true cost of getting things wrong in modern media.